We would like to thank your sponsor, Valley First, a division of First West Credit Union and a member-owned financial cooperative serving the Okanagan, Similkameen, and Thompson regions. They offer a wide range of banking and investment services for individuals and families. Valley First also has a talented business and commercial team to provide the expertise, products, and services local businesses need to grow and thrive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Business Matters presented by Valley First, a division of First West Credit Union, where we delve into the stories and insights of leaders and change makers in our community. As always, I'm your host, Rob Capello, and today we're diving into the green heart of reforestation or wildfire reforestation efforts with two guests from Caribou Carbon Solutions. Joining us are Andrew Steves, Operations Manager, and Jenny Christie, Senior Surveyor, hopefully I got that right, who are at the forefront of combating the effects of wildfires through some innovative reforestation projects. So Andrew and Jenny, thank you for joining me. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
No problem. So I think a good place to start here is just letting us know who Caribou Carbon Solutions is and what you guys do. I think that's probably a good starting point. And then we'll kind of jump in. I'd like to learn a little bit more about your guys' roles and what you do. But maybe one of you can just jump in and let us know a little bit about who you guys are and what you do.
Yeah, for sure. So Caribou Carbon Solutions is probably a mid-sized forestry consulting company in BC. And we feel that we're at the forefront of reforestation and ecosystem restoration in the province. We have a team of forest professionals that are, have a ton of experience in the tree planting space, the silviculture space of the forest industry. And we've got a bunch of different projects that we work on, a bunch of different collaborators. And we're really excited to partner up with people and be a part of projects for a greener future.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Andrew. So I was looking at your guys' roles, so I'd like to explore a little bit. So Andrew, I noticed that I think you have a title of Registered Forest Technologist and Operations Manager. So I'm always curious, what got you into it? Like, where did that journey start that you got into being a forest technologist and then moving into an operations manager? How did that journey start for you?
So I would say it started when I graduated high school in 2008, and my mom said, you've got to go find a job. And I happened to have a friend that I was graduating with. I grew up in New Brunswick, right, who was planting trees for Irving, who's one of the big forestry players on the East Coast. And so I happened to get on with a tree planting crew there. There's a university in my hometown and a bunch of guys on the soccer team all planted trees on a crew. And so that's kind of where my interest in forestry started. You know, I'd get picked up at 5:30 in the morning on the corner of the four-way stop just down the road from my house. Yeah. And that was kind of my first foray into forestry. I ended up doing something completely different as a university degree. I have a degree in kinesiology. But through that, continued to plant trees every summer just as a way to pay for school. Yeah. And honestly, that's what a lot of, Canadians in their from 18 to 23, that's what they do to pay for school. And so that really got my interest going in forestry. And I just kind of realized that that's what I wanted to do. You know, working inside in an office wasn't the most appealing. Yeah. And so I ended up going and doing a tech program at Vancouver Island University. And so that's, kind of what got me to the point I'm at now.
Interesting. As they say, the rest is history.
The rest is history, yeah.
Jenny, I was looking at your profile as well. You started out tree planting. You've evolved now to sort of more of a senior surveyor role. I'm curious, if you think back, like, what's the most rewarding part of that journey for you? Like, what gets you up in the morning? Like, what do you enjoy doing about that from the journey of, where you started and where you are today?
Well, there's two aspects to my job. So they both give me different things that make me want to get up and out of bed and do those things. So the main part is, as a silviculture surveyor, I I'm a forestry professional. It's my job as a surveyor, traditionally. So let me back up a little bit. So surveyors traditionally are hired by licensees, logging companies,
right,
to help them monitor and achieve their obligations. So after a company has logged an area, silviculture surveyors go in there, and we're the ones who take inventory, and then we submit reports to the licensees to let them know how the reforestation efforts are working out.
Right.
The way that our project works is a little bit differently in that it's not logged. These are burned areas, areas that suffered from wildfire burns. So when we go in there, the disturbance has already been done. So it's our job to go in and inventory what's left and how we want to go about reforesting it. And as a person who is my main focus is reforestation, there is no other project that I know of that's going on in BC that's more exciting to me than reforesting these areas that have been impacted by wildfires.
Interesting.
That is what I get out of bed for.
Okay, seeing the results of what, you know, you can actually see the results of the work that you're doing too, right?
Exactly. So, yeah. And the ecotyping and walking into an area and saying, okay, if spruce will go in this little draw, and we can put some pine here and some fir here based on the aspects and all these other, you know, factors at play. There's really no greater opportunity for me in the forest industry to be able to have that kind of direct impact. So the projects that CCS is doing, to me, I are the only type of projects I want to be involved in. I find the most rewarding by far.
Well, that's excellent. Thank you for sharing that. I'm curious, and maybe Andrew, you can answer this. I'm curious, and we might need the whole episode to talk about this. So maybe you need to give us the Coles notes. Is when you go into an area that's, you know, been through a wildfire, what are the initial steps you need to take when you're taking on a project like that, when it's a reforestation project? What are some of the steps that you need to take? Like, maybe let our audience know that don't see that side of it, right? Like, because wildfire happens and then you guys come in. What does that look like? What does that initial step look like for you guys?
Yeah, you're right. We could go on for a very long time about this. And I mean, honestly, it'll depend whether it's on, you know, obligation or non-obligation land, or also whether it's on private land. Kind of the steps will differ a little bit. But really, we'll go in to an area that's been burned, and we'll see, like, is there any natural regeneration here? So typically we'll walk into a burned area a year to 2 years after it's actually been burned. You do want to allow that area to start to regenerate a little bit on itself. Okay. And just see what comes back. You know, when a fire goes through the forest, often, you know, the trees will release seed from the cones, and sometimes that doesn't all get burned up, and you will see, you know, some naturals coming back, some regeneration coming back on a site. So the first step is to walk into that site, to just, you know, do a general assessment of what happened here and what is going on moving forward. And then kind of the more surveying aspect will come into it. We'll do some data collection on some specific, you know, pieces of information that we need. And that will help us build out a reforestation prescription is kind of the shorter answer of it.
And either of you can answer this, like, what are some of the challenges that you face? Like, everything from terrain to, like, what are some of the challenges that you would face when you go into an area that's been, you know, devastated by wildfire? I mean, we've obviously seen it in our region, and, you know, the Shuswap area, Kelowna area, and so forth. But what are some of the challenges you face outside of, maybe, like I said, more people think, well, terrain is one. That's probably the easy one, maybe, that I can think of. But what are other things that you guys face when you're going into something like this?
I would say access is definitely a big challenge for us. A lot of these areas were never logged or harvested because of the access being very difficult, no roads in the areas, that sort of thing. So when, you know, I would say access is the biggest part of getting into these areas. And then operationally, how do we actually get crews and trees in there to plant these areas? So it's not just how do we ourselves as surveyors get in there, but we're planning an operation, and is it feasible to actually get trees and planters into this very, very remote area, and is that feasible? I would say would be one of the biggest issues we run into.
Andrew, anything to add there, or?
No, I would say those are the two biggest challenges we have for sure.
Interesting. So I'm curious around, we're in an industry that gets uprooted by technology all the time. We live in AI world right now. We're living in an AI world right now. So I'm curious, as you guys have gone through your careers and what you're seeing today, what role does technology play for you? Like when it comes to maybe tracking growth or health of new forests, like, are you using technology, or do you still need to like fly over and see, or both? Like I'd be curious as how technology has changed your guys's industry and role over the last few years.
Andrew, I'll let you take this one.
Yeah. I mean, I would say like there's new innovations in forestry constantly. And I mean, we've now gone away from, you know, the pencil and paper in the field to do data collection, where, you know, everything's done on an iPad, where there's a right. specific app that you use to collect certain data. I mean, when you look at the forest industry as a whole, drones are becoming a really big part of or trying to become a part of reforestation. There's LIDAR that's being used to basically map out the entire province, and that, you know, is having some effects on, or may have some effects on, like timber cruising in the future or planning for harvesting. And I think we're going to end up seeing more and more drone technology involved in supporting reforestation efforts in wildfires, whether it's just like flying over an area to map it out. I know there's some technology out there now that drones can actually, you know, basically do a survey through the photos that they can capture with very high resolution cameras. And so, I mean, there's constant innovation and tools that we get to use that make our jobs a lot easier.
Interesting. And what, I should ask maybe this earlier, I'm curious, like, what areas do you guys work in? Like when it comes geography wise, like what areas do you cover? Are you all over Canada? Are you certain areas? Like where do you guys sort of, where do we find you guys when you're doing these projects?
So we're mainly all over BC. So Caribou Carbon Solutions is kind of we'll call it the professional side of the house of our company. And then we have a sister company called Zanzibar Holdings. And Zanzibar has been around for 40 years. They are a, you know, production tree planting and production surveying company. Okay. Caribou Carbon Solutions was kind of brought out of that through some projects that we were involved in, where we just needed a division between the two companies, but also just needed somewhere to kind of house all of our forest professionals, our RPFs, our RFTs, our techs, kind of all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we're spread across the province. Our head office is in Vancouver. We have an office in 100 Mile House as well. We have, you know, projects down all the way to basically a Soyuz, you know, and as far north as Quesnel Nazco area.
Right.
So a lot of our employees work remotely, you know, being on a Zoom call or a Google Meet call is pretty familiar to us. Okay. That's how we collaborate on a lot of our projects. And then, you know, we have a lot of, you know, seasonal workers that work for us. So if we need an influx of workforce in, you know, in Merritt or in 100 Mile House or somewhere else, you know, we'll hire up during that, you know, busy season to get those projects going.
Interesting. So I'm curious, like, what are some of the stakeholders you guys work with in this? Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people involved when you're coming into a project, like local community, government, and whatever the other stakeholders, you know, indigenous bands. Like, can you speak a little bit about that? Who you guys are working with when you're, because I'm sure it's just not, you know, you don't just show up, right? So there must be a lot that goes sort of on how you're working with these groups.
Go ahead, Jenny, and then I can fill in anything else if you want.
You're going to take this.
Jenny, well, I can talk about it.
I mean, support you. That's it. So,
from what I understand, this is above my pay grade. This question, it's even above Andrew's pay grade a little bit, but it's so. I will say that There is opportunity between NGOs and First Nations communities and the federal government, as well as provincial government. But mainly the stakeholders are, so my employer and the people, you know, that I work with who was, okay, how should we say, you're going to have to edit this, but
it's all good.
So our boss,
yeah,
is a bit of a visionary, I would say. And he recognized opportunity to facilitate projects where there would be different funding sources. And no one at the time was bringing in these funding sources. So the federal government and the 2 billion tree program, the First Nations and the various and the their bands and the funding available that they have available to them.
Yep.
The nonprofit organizations who have money, who have donations that want to be spent, like one or other types of NGOs,
yep,
where you would donate to plant trees, for instance. So there's all these separate entities that exist that have the same goal.
Right.
And our visionary employer who started all of this basically saw that opportunity to bring these different parties together in order to facilitate a common goal, and that was to reforest these areas. So you have First Nations who have funding available,
yep,
who don't necessarily know how to get the funding of, from the 2BT program, federal government, or NGOs. So basically what we do is facilitate the funding around that, and then we also hands like feet on the ground, get the job done. We'll do the assessments, the reconnaissance, and then we'll even go in and make sure and plant those trees. So we are a full service is what we're offering, which really is forefront in this type of emerging sector of the forest industry.
Well, and I just know there, like, there's so many moving parts. That's why I asked the question, right? Like, I think from a listener or viewer point of view, it's like how many moving parts have to happen in order for you guys to go in and do what you need to do. And I get that, right? So, yeah. Sorry, Drew, you wanted to add something there?
No, that's it. I would just say that we see ourselves as connectors in the forest industry. I mean, one of our mainstays, you know, we talk about it a lot on our website, is project origination. And I mean, you know, whether it's us coming up with a project or someone coming to us and saying, hey, like, you know, we had a wildfire in our community. Is there something you guys can do about it? Right. Can you help us reforest? And we go, oh yeah, like, we're all over that. Let's connect all the dots, you know, over the next year and figure out if we can pull a project together.
Interesting. I know there's been a lot of talk, especially in the Okanagan and Shuswap area, because it seems like they're affected every year by, we're affected every year by wildfires. And there's a lot of talk about mitigation, of doing things ahead of time so we you know, we can mitigate what's happening. Can you talk a little bit about the services, like what you guys are going to do with the reforestation, how that contributes to mitigating what might happen in the future? Is there a tie there, the type of trees you're planting, whatever it may be, that would help sort of that, you know, around that mitigation side?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty firm believers that deciduous trees offer a lot of benefit to wildfire, and typically in industry, in the forest industry of BC, deciduous trees have been looked down upon because you can't make lumber, you can't make a 2x4 out of it, and you know, the forest industry is there. It's a resource for us to make money for the province, for lots of families to feed themselves, and so in a lot of ways, like, that has made sense. But where we're getting to with climate change now and the severity of wildfires every year, you know, that's something that's starting to be looked at a little bit more, is the encouragement of deciduous trees across the landscape. They do grow naturally in a ton of parts of BC. There are, you know, certain areas, especially drier parts of BC, that don't necessarily have, you know, aspen, cottonwood, birch, maple growing. But a lot of places do. And so that is one thing that, you know, we've done a lot of trials planting aspen trees and are starting to see some success with that. And on many of our projects, we are planting that aspen trees. And we're also starting to see, you know, certain forest districts in the province, you know, trialing it out, doing some research as well. And that hasn't been common across the forest industry. Like you plant conifers and that's kind of it.
Right. Interesting.
I would add one more aspect to that is that when these areas burn, the topsoil, if it's burned severely, is burned off. And so there is a lot of site degradation after the fact. It's more prone to flash flooding and things like that. So we are also looking at, besides from using deciduous as a fire break, looking at other types of brush species like dogwood, maple, that we can help mitigate flooding. So in areas where maybe there wasn't a lot of conifers before it burned, but there were very defined gullies, we're looking at those areas and looking at what we can plant in there that will decrease the likelihood of flash flooding. Because areas like Nicola, it burned, but then flooding comes right after the burn. Yeah. It's all connected. So we're looking at the big picture, not just what trees will go best or what would be a good fire guard, but also we have other environmental events that we need to keep in mind after these wildfire burns.
Interesting. There's something I wouldn't have thought about, but definitely see that connection there. So yeah, lots of parts. Interesting. I'm curious if we could end on your thoughts on how individuals like me, businesses, how can we support reforestation efforts to help prevent wildfires? Is there opinions, is there thoughts, is there discussion around your team on like, how can the community help, or can we, how can the community help with, you know, the reforestation efforts?
That's a really good question. I mean, I would say one thing would just be, you know, supporting, you know, an NGO that, you know, that supports reforestation, funds projects. That would be a good way to do it. Spreading the word about private projects or just reforestation in general. I mean, it's very sad what's happened in Kelowna, in the Shuswap. You know, I live in the Caribou and we've had some pretty bad fires in 17, 18, and 21. And, you know, if we don't get on top of the wildfire issue, you know, we're going to have trees burn every year.
Yes.
But the back end of that is if we don't get after the reforestation part of this whole program, the longer you leave a site burnt with no topsoil, with nothing regenerating on it, no leaf litter falling, you know, every fall, the harder it is to get trees established. And I think that's the big worry for us as forest professionals is, you know, as the summers are getting hotter and drier and it's becoming more and more difficult to establish trees, you know, if you leave a site that is black, that is burned, you know, for many, many years, it's going to be very challenging to get it growing again. And I mean, what we're doing, sites will come back naturally.
Yeah, right.
They
right.
typically do, but we're trying to cut down what could be 10, 20, 30 years to get a site reestablished into we can plant it now. And, you know, 5 years from now, you're going to see a, you know, 1 to 2 meter tall tree. And that's pretty exciting.
Interesting. Well, I just love even just saying just having the public more aware and knowledgeable. Like that's where I thought even just today, like some things that you guys have said that I never even thought of. So I think just having that knowledge, because maybe I can't help directly, but you said interacting, supporting, understanding what's happening, what the next phase will be is super important. I think it's important for people to be informed. Jenny, anything you wanted to add there? Sorry.
Just that there is funding available for private landowners who have suffered from wildfire and organizations such as ourselves can help those people in letting know what the options are and also offering a full service. So there are the people who have suffered, who have had private land burned, there is I'm not an expert in this, but there is funding available through that. And I would add that also what we're seeing is a trend towards these areas transitioning to grassland. And so the projections are that more and more of British Columbia, especially in the southern interior, will be transitioning to grassland. And that is not nearly the carbon sink that we're looking for as well that we really need. So reforestation is very important in the ways that Andrew said, but also if we don't plant these areas, and some of them, they will transition to a much less productive site.
Interesting. Well, Andrew, Jenny, thank you so much for sharing some time. I know we could probably talk, like I said, for another half hour. So thank you for at least giving us some insight in the impactful work you guys are doing at Caribou Carbon Solutions. I really appreciate it. And you know, I know that what you guys do make a difference. And you know, hopefully you hear that from people. So hopefully you hear because I think, you know, what you're doing does make a significant difference in the environment. So thank you so much for spending some time with me this morning. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. And can I just put one plug in here at the end for us?
Please do.
So we are working on some private land projects in the North Shuswap. And we've kind of aggregated a bunch of private landholders together. You know, if there are people in the Kelowna area, private landowners that are interested in having properties reforested, please check out our website, cariboucarbon.ca, or send us an email at info@cariboucarbon.ca. And we'd love to talk to you about how we could involve you in a project.
Love it. Awesome. Thank you for saying that for sure. So, and we'll put the link in the article as well, so people can link right through to your guys' website if they have any questions. So, and we encourage anyone that's listening, please, you know, like we said, it's about education. So share the podcast, share the video, and hopefully people can learn if they have other, and if they have questions, they can reach out, directly to you guys with any specific questions. So again, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob.
No problem. Until next time, thank you for tuning into Business Matters, and everyone have a great day. Thank you.
We would like to thank your sponsor, Valley First, a division of First West Credit Union and a member-owned financial cooperative serving the Okanagan, Similkameen, and Thompson regions. They offer a wide range of banking and investment services for individuals and families. Valley First also has a talented business and commercial team to provide the expertise, products, and services local businesses need to grow and thrive.